This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and welcome to Garden of Sound, sponsored by miniquiz.com. This is the first new show of 2021. It's not a continuation or repeat, but some brand new newness with a guest who knows a thing or 17 million about the music business. It's Executive Director of the 212 Music Group, Carrie Caldwell. Preferring life behind the scenes, Carrie's ridden alongside and tour managed some of the biggest bands in the business. With an eye-watering 17 years of South by Southwest behind him and working alongside his wife Shani, Carrie is back in Aotearoa to offer his knowledge, experience and services to make a whole heap of New Zealand festivals and shows that little bit better. And hopefully, skill up a few aspiring international managers in the process. This is the Garden of Sound interview with Carrie Caldwell on Plains FM 96.9. Carrie, can you tell me the first time that music entered your consciousness as a young person?
Yeah, I think it was, I think I must have been about 12 or 13 or something. And
that late? Was there nothing prior to that as a young person?
I think that, well, I went to a couple of shows when I was like maybe 10 or something like that. Yeah. I think the very first show I ever went to see was Paper Lace, which was this band that had two hits. Back in the day, one was Billy Don't Be a Hero, yep. And the other one was The Night Chicago Died.
Okay.
I got taken along.
These Kiwi bands?
No. This was a, I think it was a UK band. It might have been an American band. I'm not even sure.
You were born in New Zealand though?
No, I was born in London.
Okay.
But I grew up here in Christchurch.
Right.
You know, it wasn't, I think I was brought over when I was about 6 weeks old or something mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the very first show. And I do remember the next show I went to was the Jackson 5.
Amazing.
I don't remember a lot about it. And I don't think it actually had any real impact on me as such.
So who was dragging you along to those early shows?
I just have this vague recollection of sitting next to two friends who I have no idea who they were anymore, and one of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, yeah, I must have been about 12 or 13 when Mum asked me, what do you want for Christmas? It's actually now that I'm just thinking about it. I remember the very first song that I heard, you know, and that was Chicago, If You Leave Me Now.
Okay.
And so when Mum said, So when Mum sort of said to me, what do you want for Christmas? I said, you know, I want this Chicago album.
Uh-huh.
And she went, okay, and she took me into one of the record stores and she said, you can have three albums. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Wow. So I got Chicago 10, Hot Chocolate's Greatest Hits, and Led Zeppelin.
Which Led Zeppelin album was it?
I want to say it was Led Zeppelin 1.
Yeah.
Or it might have been 2. I think it was 1. I can't remember now. But
I've got a terribly scratched copy, so it might, you know, jog your memory over there.
You should check it. It could be worth money. Yeah. Yeah, those ones. I know all about these things now. And then I remember at school this band showed up to play a lunchtime gig, and I think it was Hip Singles or Dick Driver, you know, who was around in Christchurch back in the 70s and 80s. Must have been the 80s, actually. Just being like, wow, this is amazing, you know. And then just started, you know, sort of left school and then started going to lots and lots of shows. You know, we used to go to the Gladstone and the Star and Garter. And then manager at the Star and Garter, which is obviously no longer there, asked me to do The Door.
How did that come about? Was that because he was such a fan, always there?
No.
Trustworthy soul?
I think it was more that he probably couldn't find anyone.
Okay.
And asked me to run The Door. And I remember the first band, or one of the first bands I ever did The Door for, was The Clean, which, you know, was a bit of a, you know, sort of pretty mind-blowing for what else was around at the
How
time.
How old were you at this point?
I must have been I must have been about 20, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Wouldn't have been able to get there, yeah.
And so I remember doing The Door and then just doing The Door time and time again. And then I stopped doing The Door because one night this one band, I think they were called Penknife Glides, couldn't afford to pay me. And now we're only talking in those days, you know, like cover charge to get in was like between $2 and $4. Yep. And so I went, all right, then, well, I'm just going to go home. And then that night, the Penknife Glides tour manager was doing The Door, and apparently a busload of rugby league guys or something like that came in. And when the guy tried to charge them to get in, they put the guy in hospital for 6 weeks. They completely trashed. They picked up the cash register and threw it through the door. It was all kinds of weird stuff happened. And after that, I was like, yeah, I'm not so sure I'm ever going to do The Door at that venue anymore. I think by then I'd been working and saving. I think that was one of the reasons why I was doing The Door, was to just save. You know, I was doing odd jobs, working in kitchens and stuff like that. And then just bought a ticket and flew to Amsterdam, bought a one-way ticket to Amsterdam. So I must have been about 21 then.
So just taking a step back, there's a lot of obvious enjoyment of music. Mm. Was there any desire? Is there any singing, playing, no. Anything from you?
No. I realised very quickly I don't have a musical bone in my body. This also combined with, which I learned when I was doing some tour management stuff, I don't actually like being on stage. I was tour managing Mumford & Sons years ago, and they had the opening slot at Tea in the Park, mm-hmm. and they were playing King Tut's Wah Wah stage, and it was like 12 o'clock midday that they were playing. No one had even heard of them. They'd never played in Scotland before.
Mm.
Went on stage to put the water and the things down, and someone in the audience cat whistled me, and I just went bright red, and there must have been about 200 or 300 people and just waiting for the thing to start.
Yeah.
And they all burst out laughing. And so that was me. I don't think I even walked on a stage after that for at least another year or so.
So were you following music at this point, or was it just the big OE?
Not so much. It was the big OE. I mean, you know, then I was one of those sort of, I'll work at anything.
No Door gigs?
No. I don't think I was even really looking for any at that point. You know, it wasn't really until 1993. I went for a job. I was living in London then, and I went for a job as a supervisor of the VIP restaurant at Wembley Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point I'd done one tour for some friends, the Australian Doors Show.
Mm-hmm.
And they were touring through the UK, and they were originally going to do a 4-week tour that actually ended up turning into a 4-month tour.
Okay.
I must have handed in a reference that was on that. You know? The person that interviewed me for the job at Wembley passed it on to one of her colleagues, who was putting together the merchandising operation for U2's Europa.
Mm-hmm.
And they had seen that I had worked on tour, but more importantly, that I could speak German.
Okay.
Not very well, but I could.
Where does that come from? Is it just from living there?
Living in Germany.
Yeah.
That was probably the real start. You know, that tour went on for about 3 months, maybe 3.5 months. And you meet a lot of people, and, you know, we're talking to people, and someone would say, hey, I've got this job at the Reading Festival. Do you want it? That was just working for the catering department.
Yeah.
You know, in there. And, or I met some other people that were like, hey, we're doing the operation for Pink Floyd or the Rolling Stones. And so it just sort of turned into a bit of a snowball, you know, where I was just like, I'd finish a tour and start another one straight away. You know, it was great during summer,
mm-hmm.
when there'd be like 2 or 3 tours going and you could be constantly on, but then it'd get to winter,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, living in Germany, which I was doing at the time, going back and forth between London and Dortmund, I was just like, so I ended up just coming back to New Zealand.
There's a whole heap of artists you've mentioned from, you know, Hot Chocolate in Chicago, Led Zepp and so on, all the way through. Is there any particular song by any artist that you feel, you know, says a little bit about Carrie?
I think the first song that came into my head was Good Day Sunshine by the Beatles, from the Revolver album. When I was living at home here in Christchurch, I was lucky enough to have a room separate from the house in the backyard, which sort of became a bit of a haven for a lot of friends, you know, that were still living at home, like all of us were, because we were still at high school and things like that. And when they used to come over, you know, you used to just play sort of albums and everything like that. And that was one album that I'd always just play constantly, constantly, constantly. One of the things in this room, the walls were all white, and we always had marker pens there, and so there was lots of amazing artwork and little sayings written on the wall. And then one morning I woke up and opened up the door, and a couple of friends had come over, obviously during the night, and painted Good Day Sunshine down the whole length of the door. And that song I used to play all the time, and I still try. I don't always succeed, but I still try and think about that song every now and then, you know, like, because it's a good start to the day kind of thing, you know, just to, you know, keep you positive.
Good day sunshine, good day sunshine, good day sunshine. I need to laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day. Good day sunshine, good day sunshine, good day sunshine. We take a walk, the sun is shining down, burns my feet as they touch the ground. Good day sunshine, good day sunshine, good day sunshine. Then we lie beneath a shady tree. I love her and she's loving me. She feels good, she knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine. Good day sunshine, good day sunshine, good day sunshine, good day sunshine.
This is the Garden of Sound interview with Carrie Caldwell on Plains FM 96.9. Carrie, I normally ask at this point about the first gig you got along to. Now, we've already heard about the Jackson 5, and I can't remember, what was it?
Paper Lace? Yeah.
Okay. Who was the first gig that really, or the first artist that really made an impression on you? Maybe it was big, maybe it was small.
It was, and still is, Thin Lizzy.
Okay. Where was this?
And I think it was more the fact that I couldn't go to a gig. They played one show in Auckland, and I must have been about 15 or something like that. And I sort of asked if I could go, and it was like, you can't go up there alone sort of thing. So I missed it. But I always had this great poster on my wall of Phil Lynott, you know. And, you know, it's just a band that I really, really love, and sort of like, not so much an obsession, but I mean, I've got a huge collection of Thin Lizzy albums and, you know, 7 inches and books of poetry by Phil Lynott. And
so did you get to see them at all? Have you, before his passing?
No, not before his passing. I was in Amsterdam one time, and Thin Lizzy were playing. Yeah, this was a different time. I was, and Thin Lizzy were playing at this amazing venue there called Paradiso.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I was there. I might have been en route somewhere else, you know, but was stopping over for a couple of days. And this was after I was working at South by Southwest, so I knew a few of the people in the industry there, and I'd hooked up with them. And one of them worked at the Paradiso and said, you know, Thin Lizzy's playing tonight. And I was like, yeah, I want to go.
Yeah.
And then I remember we had a bet, like if you could picked the first three songs that they played and got it right, you didn't have to buy drinks. Although it kind of defeated the purpose because we had to buy drinks, you know, for the first three songs. But I nailed it. I can't remember which ones they were now, but I absolutely nailed it.
Yep.
The first three songs. And so after that show, we got taken to this venue that was one of those ones that you'd only know about if you're a local.
Okay.
And walked into a bar, went out into the back room, and then there was this old school rockabilly band playing called the Blasters. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
No.
They're a legendary US rock band. These guys were all in their 50s, 60s. Fully brutal show. But then I realised that one of the friends turned around to me and said, "Oh, you've probably figured out that this bar's owned by the Hells Angels." And I said, "Yeah," I sort of kind of gathered that because of everyone wearing Hells Angels patches. I think the reason that I remember that night was to get back to my hotel because I was staying at a Hilton hotel somewhere. Two of the guys gave me and the person who had taken me to the show, they were giving her a lift home, but they swung by the hotel. And so I got to go on the back of a Harley with the Dutch Hill, you know, the MCM
Dutch
Hells Angels.
Hells Angels.
It was pretty cool. And they all seemed pretty chill guys, but, you know.
So you spent a lot of time in Europe and you're traveling around with various shows and events and so on, and you make your way back to New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then? Is music still a part of your life?
Yeah. I came back and decided I'd do a couple of courses. And I did an event management course. So did that, started working with an organization called Blah Blah Entertainment Trust, who used to also be known as BRAT.
Okay.
And we released a couple of compilation CDs of Christchurch bands. First one was called Brat. The second album was called Bride of Brat. And then the last one was called Marvin, for some reason. They were just compilations of Christchurch bands at the moment. The second one, Bride of Brat, I still think that's a pretty good compilation.
So who was on that?
Salmonella Dub, Slim, Fuse, Bunyip, Psycho Puppets maybe. If I look at it now, I'd go, oh, I remember that song, you know. Yeah. It was kind of weird. It was a shame sort of that, you know, we were running it and we didn't really know what we were doing, but we managed to get an office. I think it's a hairdresser's now. It's above where C1 is. Just at the back, there's the cinema, and then above it, there's a little sort of office on the top of the building there. And we kind of created a bit of a one-stop shop for artists, you know, like you can come in and ask us questions, and if we didn't know, we could find out. And we were helped by the Christchurch City Council and, you know, bits and pieces like that.
So I was going to ask you that question, sort of like looking back, and what were we, circa 96, 97?
Oh, maybe a bit later than that, maybe about 99, 2000,
okay,
something like that.
Round about then. What would you have done differently? And what's wrong with Christchurch that things tend to fall over? And I'm not talking specifically about the quakes.
I don't think there was anything wrong with Christchurch. I think it was just that, you know, it was like learning how to use a computer for the first time, for example. We had some experience, but not a lot of experience, you know, because most of my work had been on festivals and touring.
Yep.
Well, you know, that doesn't necessarily equate well to running a business, you know. I think we would have realised a lot more things than, you know, just in hindsight. I don't think there's anything wrong with Christchurch itself, though. The musical talent that's come out of Christchurch, to be fair, they've all had to move up to Auckland, but that's where the industry's based. It's like, you know, a small band in Kentucky or something is, you know, in the US is still going to have to move to LA or New York, as it were.
So what could Christchurch do or do better to keep the talent living here?
It's always going to be difficult. New Zealand's at the, you know, at the end of the world sort of thing. Obviously, at the moment, we're in a unique situation where we're one of the only countries that does have touring,
yep,
that does have live shows,
yep,
does have festivals. But it still means that it's only happening here in New Zealand.
Yeah.
These days, with technology, it doesn't really matter where you are. You know, you can still stream, you can still go for publishing, you can,
yep,
still do all bits and pieces like that. I don't know what it is about Christchurch that generate such amazing talent. I think it's just fact of the matter is, you know, that the industry's up north. You know, I still think there are people who are doing some amazing little things down here, you know.
Like who?
Setting up little labels. Like the small record store that's above Smash Palace.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's a little record store up there. Well, they've just released an album from one of the guys from Salad Boys.
Yes.
But doing little things like that, you know, I think it's just setting up infrastructure, setting up businesses, and people are doing it.
Yeah.
But again, you're also set back by population. But I still think it's possible to do something with it. But I mean, again, I'm saying that because I've had the benefit of working at South by Southwest for 17 years. So my network of contacts is
quite wide.
Vast.
We're going to get to that in the next part of the show, but it is time for some more music. Okay. All-time fave? Just pick one.
God Only Knows by the Beach Boys.
Why?
Because it's a perfect pop song from the best album ever recorded. It's very simple. I should also say that part of my vinyl geekness means that, as you probably know, there's 128 different versions of vinyl versions of Pet Sounds.
And originally in mono.
Mono, yep.
Yeah, okay.
But there are actually, I think it's actually 128 vinyl, different vinyl releases.
Yeah.
And
how many do you have?
111.
Always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
This is the Garden of Sound interview with Kerry Caldwell on Plains FM 96.9. There's Christchurch. We're talking about around about the 2000s and things like that. Then there's this little thing called South by Southwest, which I've heard a little bit about. How did this come about? Because that's in Austin, isn't it? How do we bridge that musical gap?
I was at this point, I think I must have been in my late 30s, and I was like, you know, I sort of really need to get a Monday to Friday 9-to-5 type job, and I need to get you know, pension plan and all that sort of thing working out. But I'll take one last trip around the world, and I'll see all these old friends, and then I'll come back to New Zealand, and I'll sort of get a Monday to Friday kind of thing. And I had friends in Austin, and I sort of organised that I'm going to come over and visit at some point. And they said, "Oh, if you come around March, you should volunteer for this festival we have here called South by Southwest." And I'd never even heard of it, so I got online, had a look, and went, "Oh, this looks like fun." So I got in touch with them and said, "I want to come over and volunteer." And they came back to me and went, "You're coming from New Zealand? What?" And I was like, "Yeah, no, I want to come from New Zealand." And I'd organised to stay there for 6 weeks. And I went on the first day to volunteer. And this was like 6 weeks before the event. And the guy that was signing me up turned around and said, "So you need to do, you know, like 40 hours to get a badge." And I went, "Didn't come over here, you know, all the way from New Zealand just to work 40 hours over the next 6 weeks. Is it okay if I just come in every day and I'll find stuff to do?" And so I would sit in this volunteer office, and every time someone came in and said, "I need a hand with something," I'd go, I'll do it, you know. I think a lot of people ended up that were full-time staff thought I was an intern or something. I don't think they realised that I was a volunteer, but, you know, obviously it was a little bit different because of the accent and because of the fact that, what, you flew all the way over from New Zealand for this, you know?
Yeah.
So I did the first year. Then one of the directors who eventually became my boss for the following 16 years sort of came up to me and said, "Are you planning on coming back?" And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had so much fun." And he was like, "Well, would you like to work for me?" And I was like, "Okay." So for the following year, I went back over and literally intern, so I still didn't get paid. But then over the years, they started helping me out with things like visas, and which culminated in last year, after about a 3-year process, I got the green card.
Brilliant.
Literally got it, and then they helped organise my wife Shani to get one as well, because she also works at South By. And then they let me go in March last year when the city of Austin cancelled the event. But by that point, both of us had green cards. So,
what's the biggest thing you've taken away from the festival over those years?
Wow.
Just condense it down. Can I have a 2-minute soundbite, please?
Okay. A lot of music, but more from a work point of view.
Yeah.
It's attention to detail. It's the little things that are going to screw you up. It's, you know, like big picture things, you know, you can generally see if it's going to be an issue. But it's those little things that start combining with other little things that can really screw you over.
Okay.
And the department I worked for at South By was the planning department. The director of that, a guy called Mike Shea, he was meticulous about those fine details. And he would hound you over, like, "But they said and instead of or," that kind of thing.
It's sounding very much almost like a little city, or the planning sounds a bit like the council in a way.
Mm-hmm.
How big is the whole structure of the organisation, or the thing itself? How many people? What sort of money are we talking about?
Well, before I was laid off, along with about 100 staff, there was probably about 250 full-time staff.
Wow.
We were spread over 2 floors of a 13-story building.
Yep.
Which is called South by Southwest Centre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, South by Southwest was like, a lot of people just know it as the music festival, but there was also an educational conference, a film festival, an interactive media conference, and the music conference that took place over about 2.5 weeks. You know, it was just huge, huge event. It just completely transformed the city of Austin. Our department was responsible for putting together the economic impact report, or culminating all the information that would go into an economic impact report at the end of each year. And I want to say that the last one, which would have been 2019, I think it generated something like $360 million for the city over the course of the two and a half weeks. So, I mean, it was had a huge impact on the city, as did the when it was cancelled. You imagine a city's losing that much income over the period. You know, it's just catastrophic, really.
So was it still sort of floating your boat after all those years?
Everything's always easier to look at in hindsight. When I first got laid off for South By after 17 years, I was just like, what? Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. You know, it was sort of, why you let me go? I mean, in hindsight now, I could think and go, well, that's because I was spending money for them. I was never making them any money. And I dealt primarily, by the time I left, was dealing primarily with threat awareness and security and things like that. So I think a lot of it was looking at it and going, why are we paying for this guy when the festival's not happening? So, you know, so I could appreciate it.
Yep.
And so then when I returned to New Zealand, it was almost like, well, this is actually quite exciting now. I'm sort of getting excited again because it was starting to get a bit routine. Yeah, and it was starting to get comfortable. It was starting to get a bit routine. It was starting to get a bit boring.
Yeah.
Whilst it was, you know, there was a whole bunch of returning to New Zealand, leaving all our stuff in the US. Basically, my wife and I decided on a Tuesday that we were going to leave the US, and we flew out on the Friday. But again, when we came back and we flew right back into the first weekend of level four lockdown, and we spent those 2 weeks in quarantine sort of figuring out, well, what are we going to do now? Which is why we set up 212 here in New Zealand. And then I started talking to a very dear friend of mine, Flip Grader, that runs Grader Goods Deli, about, you know, think about doing some shows. So we started prepping for those in level three to go for level two as soon as we went out into level two. And so little things like that, even though it wasn't generating a lot of cash for the company, it was something new because I'd never done booking before. Well, not really. I'd never really done booking
before. Talking about artist booking.
Yeah, artist booking. I'd done a little bit at South By. It was interesting. I made a couple of mistakes, and it was sort of grateful to a few people in the industry that gave some constructive criticism, you know, and I always think it's good to hear that, you know, when you, so that we were able to readdress the artist fee structures and everything like that, which was great, you know. Just apologise to those first couple of bands.
Total politician. This is brilliant.
No, but it really was. Even though we weren't earning a great deal of money, it sort of kept us focused and doing stuff. And then we just started getting a couple of approaches from people about, hey, we've got this festival, you know, can you help out? And so we started working on, and we're still working on, Banks Peninsula Festival out Norton Bradley in February. And then started talking to Team Event, who put on the Wine and Food Festival, the Great Kiwi Beer Fest, Nostalgia, Electric Avenue, 660, and ended up getting some work for them, which coming up. So, I mean, I'm going to be really busy from...
today.
Which is today. So I'm not even really here.
Yeah.
Or there. I'm just in
Lies.
Between. Yeah.
Lies.
Then I'm on site right through to the 9th of February.
Yep.
Then a week off to do Nostalgia, then Banks Peninsula, then go back on site again for Electric Avenue.
Amazing.
So things like that, it suddenly become exciting again. Whereas before it was sort of like, with it South By, it was exciting for all the wrong reasons. One of the things that I was doing, I said it was dealing with threat awareness and security and stuff. It would get exciting if I suddenly got notified of a stalker threat or something like that.
Which is not why you got into it in the first place.
No.
I do have to ask... During all that time, who was your favourite band? Who was the biggest act or your favourite act that you saw at the festival?
Beastie Boys.
Okay.
Metallica.
Yep.
A lot of it was more about the artists that were really small. You know, Noga Ariz from Israel, for example, who's just releasing a new album and sort of doing very well. And a lot of the New Zealand band. I mean, we had artists. I mean, this is before I really knew Mumford & Sons, but we booked Mumford & Sons to play in a hotel lobby and they played to about 30 people. And right on after them was Gary Clark Jr., who played to about 15 people. You know, things like that. One of the things about South By is that with the work, I guess I would average, they'd have up to about 2,000 bands over the whole event. I might catch maybe three of them. And of course, I'm going to remember all of the ones I should have said yep. as soon as I leave the interview, you know.
Yep. But it is time for some music. I've asked for a band that you've worked with and you said...
The Rolling Stones. Yeah.
Okay. What track are we going to hear?
Can You Hear Me Knocking?
Is the Garden of Sound interview with Carrie Caldwell on Plains FM 96.9. With all the bands you work with over the years doing a variety of things, what are your top tips? What are the things that are going to make life easy for those groups in working with an event management team? What's going to make your life easy? What's going to make you want to help them in return?
I get that a lot of artists, it's about their music. But it's the music industry, it's the festival and touring industry. That means it's business. So it's not only about the music anymore. It's about,
it's not Woodstock.
It's not. God for that, or at least the last Woodstock that they tried, which was just like a fire festival waiting to happen. You've got to sort of realise that the days of just showing up and playing are long gone. No one's got time for any attitude. And it's not like you see it a lot anymore, but you do occasionally. And I certainly haven't seen it since I've been back, but, you know, I've come across artists that are just complete pricks, you know, and it's sort of like, well, we're all trying to work towards the same goal here. You know, you're part of a business, you know, your own business. It's like a band is like a small company. And I think you've got to treat it like such. And if you're one of the artists that doesn't want to have anything to do with it, just wants to create music, that's perfectly fine. But there's got to be someone aligned with you that does understand that business side of things. Like these days, you know, you don't just get paid cash anymore when you do your show. You've got an invoice. So just having some basic skills on how to send an invoice, or if someone asks for, you know, like a technical writer and a stage plot, you know, have at least some knowledge of what that's about. Mm-hmm. If you're and this is part of being a professional, if you're scheduled to play at this time for this long, be there and play for that long, and then move on, you know. There's so many aspects to it now that, you know, take it above being just about the music anymore. And especially if you're in New Zealand, where, as I said earlier, that, you know, we do have the privilege at the moment that we can tour, that we can put on shows. New Zealand musicians need to be a lot more savvy on the international prospects that are available to them, and at the moment there's not a huge amount. In fact, there's virtually none. But that doesn't mean that you can't review publishing and streaming and you know, social media and things like that. That again might not be your particular thing. You know, you just want to create music. Again, that's fine. But have someone associated with the act, or someone within your band, or whatever that is into these things and can help you with that.
Yep.
New Zealand has always seemed quite supportive. You know, like individual have seemed quite supportive. I have meetings all the time with people that have just found me and gotten in touch and said, can we catch up? I'm always more than happy to do that. I always have been. But I also think that at the moment, because the whole music industry internationally is, you know, going through the times that it's going through at the moment, that a lot of people that in the past may have been unapproachable are suddenly becoming very approachable because they've got time on their hands. They're still trying to justify their jobs, which means they need to talk to artists, or that they're up for doing things. One of the things that 212 Music Group's just done, and this was just as a basis of we've got time on our hands, or we had time on our hands, we just launched last Friday the 212 podcast.
Yep.
And we've got one of our colleagues who's in Melbourne interviewing a bunch of people from around the world. And we started up our first one with Ben Lovett from Mumford & Sons, mm-hmm. and talking mainly about his other company called The Venues Group. And we've followed through with about 8 other people, of which a couple of them I thought, they're going to say no to us. And they said yes. And so now we've got some approaches out for the second series of the podcast. And we've approached some big names. And, you know, a couple of them have said yes. Some of them haven't replied. One or two have said no. But what's the worst that can happen is that they said no. That shouldn't stop us from asking, and it's very easy to find these people now if you know who to look for. Nothing should stop you these days from asking or creating a dialogue, mm-hmm. or, you know,
just talking to people.
It's, you know, like, particularly in the music industry, it's not what you know, it's who you know. You know, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
And again, it's like running your artist or your label or anything like that. It's just like running any small business. Money comes in, money goes out.
We're going to take a short break. go and pay some bills, as they say, and we're going to come back with Kerry Caldwell as he plays, as you play, Mini Quiz.
This is the Garden of Sound interview with Kerry Caldwell on Plains FM 96.9.
There's only one way to settle this.
There is another way. Visit miniquiz.com and see how your general knowledge stacks up against friends, family, and Darren down the road. It's free and a great way to get you ready for the big leagues. Visit miniquiz.com now. That's miniquiz.com and show everyone who the quizzed in your neighborhood really is. Miniquiz.com. Start small and do them all.
This is the Garden of Sound interview with Kerry Caldwell on Plains FM 96.9, and it is time for Mini Quiz. Now, you did pick those three Thin Lizzy songs and got your drinks paid for, which was excellent. So yeah. I think these 10 questions I'm about to give you, you'll have a good chance. If you don't know the answer, just say pass,
yeah.
Because time is of the essence. You do have 1 minute to answer, okay. And Kerry Caldwell, your time starts. What was the name of the tribute song that Stevie Wonder sang about Martin Luther King?
Pass.
Alison Moyet and Vince Clarke made up which band formed in
80s? Yazoo.
What was the name of the tribute song Roberta Flack sang about Don McLean?
American Pie? No.
Which band had a hit entitled Dirty Old Town?
Pogues.
In which year did the Village People release the best-selling single YMCA?
1976.
Which artist released the best-selling album entitled True Blue in 1986?
Elvis Costello? No.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Which band sang the lyrics, "Makes you wonder how the other half die"?
I don't know, but a great lyric.
Which New Zealand band released a 2008 album entitled Beautiful Machine?
She Had.
And that is all the questions we have time for. Here we go. What was the name of the tribute song that Stevie Wonder sang about Martin Luther King? It was Happy Birthday. Alison Moyet, Vince Clarke, Yazoo, well done. Yeah. The tribute song Roberta Flack sang about Don McLean was Killing Me Softly.
Ah, of course.
Which band? Dirty Old Town, The Pogues, well done. Village People released YMCA in 1978. You were very close. Which artist released the best-selling album entitled True Blue in 86? That was Madonna. Which band sang the lyrics, Makes You Wonder How the Other Half Die? Devil Inside, every single one of us. In excess.
Oh, right, yeah.
And which New Zealand band released the 2008 album entitled Beautiful Machine? She Had.
Yeah.
There we go. Three.
Oh, God.
You'll never live it down. They no. were tough. They were tough.
Were they the
same
week. Questions that Greg got asked?
No, absolutely not. Fresh questions every time. He got the Christmas edition.
That would have been harder.
We'll do an extra for experts. All right, what's coming up? Apart from all of those things that are happening in summer, what's the far off? What does Mr. Caldwell want to do?
Well, we still have a bunch of shows that we're booking at Greater Goods. We've got bookings right up until June.
All the spaced out sessions? Is mm-hmm. that what it's called?
Yeah, spaced out sessions. Yep. They're all on Wednesdays. We also booked one of the stages at the Nostalgia Festival, mm-hmm. Called the Spaced Out Session Stage. We have the ongoing 212 podcast.
Yep.
That the next episode gets released tomorrow.
Yep.
Shani and I have to return to the US for some time. We're also, obviously, a lot of it's in limbo with events and stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had about, and we're all hoping that they come back, you know, I'm not sure we stand with that. But we had festivals that we were working on in the UK, in Scandinavia, in Hong Kong. So if all of those, for whatever, hopefully come back, we'd be very, very busy on a lot of those.
Yeah.
Building a house.
Okay.
And other than that, just buying vinyl. You know.
And apparently 4,000 albums, I'm told.
Yeah, and counting.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. Kerry, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
It is absolutely delightful to have you in our backyard, as it were, again, a homecoming. What's the track we're going to get taken out with today?
Well, I thought we'd better have something that was of, you know, like recent, as opposed to thing. And so this is one act that I think is one of the most exciting acts to come out of the UK in a while. It's a band called Sleaford Mods. Mm-hmm. The reason I posed this one was BHS is, A, it's got a great beat, but just before She Had came on at Rhythm and Alps this year or last year, on the 31st, this was the track that played just before She Had came on, and it was great. The crowd just went nuts for it, and it's such a cool song.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to MiniQuiz.com for sponsoring the show. This has been Garden of Sound. You can find out more about the gigs Carrie's involved with this year by heading to gardenofsound.nz and clicking on his photo on the front page. We've also got a nice little playlist for you to check out on that page too, with almost all of the acts we've talked about today.
Love to have you back next week. In the meantime, keep well, keep listening, and keep playing. Haere rā.